Doug Rupert. He is a scientist at RIT International's Health Communication Program. Mr. Rupert has a dual background in public health and strategic communication, and he specializes in researching, designing, and evaluating health communication campaigns. His current focus is on how consumers make decisions about prescription medications and how direct-to-consumer marketing influences those decisions. Today's presentation focuses on the effects of including quantitative benefit information in direct-to-consumer prescription drug ads. Let's welcome Deb.
Hey everybody, so I'm Doug Rupert from RTI International in the Health Communication Program, and the lesson learned today is if you ever upload a bio to APHA, they will hang on to it for years, because that was actually something from a couple years ago. So use with caution the upload function. So I'm thrilled to be here today. Thank you for the introduction, Kimonia. What I really wanted to talk about today is a study that we did in partnership with the U.S. Food and Drug Administration about how individuals use these online health communities and what role those communities play in ultimately influencing individuals' health decisions. You know, there's a lot that we do know about online health communities. We know a little bit about what's discussed there. We know a little bit about the benefits of participating in these online communities. But there's also a lot that we don't know. We don't know why individuals join these communities. We don't know how they judge the credibility of the information that they find there. And we don't know how those communities play into the ultimate health decisions that individuals make. And so that's what we tried to answer with this study and what I wanted to talk about today. So just to start off, I have no financial relationships to disclose. And in fact, there's a couple people in the audience who know me and know that I have 1.5-year-old twins, so I have no finances whatsoever to speak of at all. At the risk of stating the obvious, let's establish that we'll go online for health information. A huge chunk of U.S. adults and internet users go online to look for information about symptoms that they're experiencing, about drugs or other treatments that they might try, about insurance information, about other peers who have illnesses or issues similar to themselves. And they go to places like Google. They go to medical websites. And increasingly, we find that they're going to these online health communities where they can interact with folks like them. And so I just want to stop for a moment and clarify. When we're talking about online health communities, what is it we mean? And at least within the context of this study, when we refer to online health communities, we're talking about internet-based forums where individuals really interact with one another on the issues of health and wellness. And so three items, I guess, to draw out of that definition are, number one, that these are virtual groups. They're not an extension of something that happens in person. Number two, that they're health-focused. This is not Facebook. This is not Twitter. These are communities that are truly focused on one or more health issues or wellness issues. And finally, that this is peer-to-peer dialogue. This is not a question and answer with a physician or a healthcare provider. It is not getting help about insurance information from your insurer. This is an opportunity for individuals to interact with other patients, other caregivers, and really talk to them, dialogue with them about those health issues. So what do we know about online health communities? We know that they're popular and getting more popular all the time. About 20% of internet users and a full quarter of folks of internet users with chronic illnesses have actively participated in online communities. We know that treatment options and medications in particular are really common topics. And we know that there's some benefits of participating in these communities. Increased social support, increased adherence to interventions when those communities are paired with behavioral change interventions. Increased medical knowledge, and at least according to self-reported information, more informed treatment decisions. People report feeling more informed about the decisions they make. But there's also a lot that we don't know about these communities. We don't know a lot about membership. Why do people join? When do they join? How do they find out about the communities? What is the importance of reputation and credibility? How do folks tell what's a reputable community? How do they judge the credibility of other members and of the information that they see in there? How do they know if it's legit? How important is privacy to these folks? Are they interested in protecting their anonymity? Is it not important to them? What type of treatment discussions do they go into? We know treatment's an important topic, but what do they talk about? Do they talk about effectiveness? Do they talk about side effects? What type of treatments? And finally, what is that influence on health decision? If somebody learns something new in an online community, what role does it play in that health decision? Is it influential? Is it minor? Where do they take that information and what do they do with it? So to help answer those questions, we conducted a series of 10 focus groups, both in person and virtual, to try and answer some of those questions. We started out by talking to just general online community members, and then we split it up, talking to heavy users and active users, contrasting that with folks who are more passive or light users, tend to be listeners rather than participators. And then we drilled down into folks who've recently been diagnosed with fibromyalgia, folks who'd recently made a major treatment decision about depression, and folks who all belong to the same multiple sclerosis community. And we did that so that in those latter three groups, we could really focus in on how that online community played a role in understanding their diagnosis, in making that treatment decision, and what the dynamics are when people participate in that same community. So this research took place the latter part of last year. We had 89 members of active, verified online health communities, and I mean active and verified. When folks were recruited for the study, they were required to provide a URL. We went to those communities. We made sure that they were current, that people were participating, that they were real. And so this was, it was self-reported participation, but we also made sure that those communities were there and really active. For the purposes of this study, we focused only on illness and not on wellness. So folks couldn't belong to a smoking cessation community, for instance, or a general weight loss community. It had to be focused on an illness, diabetes, depression, morbid obesity, things like that. We talked to English-speaking adults who didn't participate as part of their job, and we also had some more defined eligibility criteria for the latter groups. So, for instance, if we were looking at active users, we wanted folks who visited more frequently than the passive users or were more likely to post rather than just listen. We conducted for the in-person groups. They were structured, moderated discussions that lasted about 2 hours. The virtual groups lasted half that time, 1 hour, and they were live chat platforms. So think of it as one large continuing instant message where we interacted with folks and they were able to type and text their responses. At the end of the 10 focus groups, we transcribed the conversations and coded them with two independent coders in InVivo 9.2 and then looked for the themes across those focus groups. What were the trends that we saw? What did we see as coming out of all those groups? And so what did we find? Well, we found a couple different things. First, we found that really people tended to belong to one of four types of online community. The first that we found is people belonged most commonly to these mega sites that I would call them. So these are the WebMD exchange groups, the Yahoo groups, the health boards, these mega sites that have multiple communities for multiple illnesses within them. To a lesser extent, but also very popular, we found that folks belong to nonprofit or medical-based communities, so the Mayo Clinic-sponsored community, and also nonprofit organizations like the American Cancer Society or the Crohn's and Colitis Foundation that had their own communities funded underneath that. Lesser extent, we saw people belonging to single illness communities focused on, let's say, rheumatoid arthritis or morbid obesity. And then there was a small group of folks that belonged to insurer-sponsored communities, which we thought was pretty interesting because when they first started talking about it, we thought they were mistaken and they were talking about some of the live chat help that you might find with Cigna or Blue Cross Blue Shield. But in fact, some of these insurers are hosting online communities where peers and patients can interact with one another. And that was something we didn't expect. So how do people find these communities? I thought this was really interesting. Most of them just stumble across it. I've learned something new. I've been diagnosed. I need to make a treatment decision, and I'm going to Google it. I'm going to look for it in a search engine, and in those search results, I come across this online health community. And hey, it looks interesting. I'm going to find out more. Very few people sought out communities on their own. Very few people said, I want to join a place where I can talk to other people like me. There were a couple instances where folks were referred by providers, family, friends, but that was very uncommon. Most of it was stumbling across the communities and web searches. And in the same vein, most people joined post-diagnosis. We expected a little bit more pre-diagnosis joining, where people had symptoms. They were kind of suspicious of what might be going on. And with the exception of folks who had fibromyalgia, that was very uncommon. Most of the people were diagnosed before they decided to join these online health communities. And as far as the reasons for membership, it was largely learning about the illness. I want to learn about an illness for myself. I want to learn about an illness for a caregiver. That's important to me. Some people were seeking support. Some people said there's not support groups in my area because it's such a rural place. But by and large, people were joining to learn more about their illnesses, to learn what options were available to them. I want to talk a bit about the importance of reputation, because one of the questions we asked is, okay, you stumble across these results. You decide you want to join a community. How do you know which ones are reputable? And the first thing we heard is that that was only important to about half of the folks. Some of the folks said, yeah, this is really important to us. It's really important that we join a reputable community. And others said it wasn't. And it seemed to split along the lines of why they were going there. For the folks who were really going there to learn about the illness and learn about treatment options, accuracy was really important to them. And so because of that, the reputation of the community was important. People who were more there for support or to hear about others' experiences, the reputation of that community was less important to them. They figured that it would all work out in the wash when they hear those different experiences. And in terms of identifying what is a reputable community, interestingly enough, people said, well, if it's relevant to me, if what's being posted is relevant to me, it must be a reputable community. If it's current, if people are posting regularly, it must be reputable. If it's been around a long time, it must be reputable because people keep coming back to it. On the same vein, we asked people, well, how do you determine if the members are credible, if the information they're sharing is credible? And I think we learned a couple different things that were important. First of all, we learned that in terms of the members, there was this healthy skepticism of who other members said they were, especially about healthcare providers. Folks would say that there were individuals on there who self-identified as a nurse or a doctor, and there was really this kind of distrust of that person. They did not add more weight to that person's posting, and in some cases added less weight to it, thinking that that person was probably fibbing who they said they were, and if they wanted a provider perspective, they'd talk to their own provider about it. In the same vein with information, they said, if the information is detailed, if I can relate to it, if they share experiences of an illness that I've experienced, then it's probably credible information. If there's some consensus in the community, it's probably credible. If I can cross-check it, it's credible. Privacy concerns, I thought, was really interesting, seemed to split three ways. There was this group of individuals who said, yeah, I'm concerned about privacy. I want to keep my diagnosis private. I want to be anonymous. I don't want spam. And then there were these folks who said, no, privacy is not important to me. But some of them felt it wasn't important because they can control it. I can control what I put out there. I'm in charge of my own privacy. And then there were these folks who said, this is the digital age. There is no privacy. If I'm joining one of these communities, I can't have any expectation of privacy, and I just have to accept that I'm putting myself out there. And they have some, for those who were concerned about privacy, they talked about some of the protective behaviors that they took to try and protect their confidentiality or their identity. So what did people talk about related to treatment? Well, we saw a couple different things. We saw, as other researchers found, that prescription and over-the-counter drugs were a majorly common topic, but also that individuals were talking about behavioral therapy, diet and exercise. And so these would be things like people with Crohn's or colitis, for instance, wanting to know what foods they might try, what exercises they might try. Alternative therapies and clinic-based therapies to a lesser extent, thinking about lap band surgery or chemotherapy. And within those treatment topics, what we found is that effectiveness of those treatments and the side effects were by far the most common things to talk about. There was some discussion of recovery periods, some discussion of cost, but by and large, people wanted to know what are the side effects of this treatment that others have experienced? What is the effectiveness of this treatment? What can I expect if I were to try it? We found, too, that personal experiences, perhaps not surprisingly, personal experiences rather than factual references were the most common type of information shared. But we also found that that's what people wanted. They found the factual stuff helpful, but they wanted people's personal experiences. They wanted to hear what others were going through. They were willing to take the information with a grain of salt, and understand that one person's experience shouldn't be totally projected to them, but across a lot of different folks, those experiences were informative. Those experiences were helpful. And in the same vein, they felt like the pros and cons of treatments balanced out. There's a concern, of course, that are the people on these communities only sharing what worked? Are they only sharing what didn't work? And what members told us is that across the message threads, maybe not within a particular member, but across the threads, it balances out. It balances out, and we tend to hear a pretty balanced perspective of what works and what doesn't. So the golden question, what role do these online communities play in health decisions? What we heard is that people are not just taking what they learn in these communities and acting on it. Instead, they're taking what they learn and doing additional research on it. What can I find out? I've heard this from the community, but what can I find out from WebMD? What does the National Library of Medicine have to say about this? What's my existing knowledge on it? What do I already know? How does this mesh with it? Is it a total contrast, or does it kind of support what I've been hearing from others? And ultimately, people take that information to their provider, either to talk about them, the provider directly with it, to say, this is what I've learned, what do you think? Or just to inform the questions that they ask the provider. And from that, move on to a treatment decision. There were some exceptions in terms of self-care activities. If folks heard about a dietary approach that might work for Crohn's disease, for instance, they might try it on their own. But by and large, what folks learned from online health communities filtered through additional research, filtered through their existing knowledge, and perhaps most importantly, filtered through the provider discussions that they had. So what does this all mean in terms of what we do? Well, I think it means a couple things, both for building online communities for patients and caregivers, and for how we help individuals to make more informed health decisions. First, we know that folks are going to these communities because they want answers. Peer support's part of it, but mainly they want answers to their health conditions. And so if we're building communities, we need to make sure that we're providing information that patients and caregivers find helpful, that answers some of those questions. If we're trying to help folks make more informed health decisions, those communities may be an important route for doing that. We find that folks stumble across online health communities, so if we're creating ones and we want folks to find it, we need to have a web presence. We need to make sure they're going to stumble across it, that they're going to find it. We know that folks are cautious. Perhaps we don't need to be concerned that they're going to be hoodwinked by what they find in the communities, but know that individuals approach them with a healthy level of skepticism, that they want to verify the information they find there with existing resources. And so maybe suggesting what some of those resources might be could be helpful to folks. We know that they want personal experiences, and we know that this is just a starting point for individuals. It's not, they don't take it as gospel. They take it as a starting point that gives them ideas for what those treatment decisions might be. So I guess in conclusion, I want to acknowledge the study team and the authors who participated and really helped with this project, my folks at RTI International, as well as the folks over at the Food and Drug Administration, including my co-author, Kit Akin, who's in the back of the room. And if you're a nerd like me, you'll probably want to look up the references that I used, and so I've included them here for you so that you have them at your disposal from the handouts online. So, thanks.
Yes.